Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to The Hotbed. This is Series 3, Episode 4. I'm Aniki Somerville.
And I'm Lisa Williams. We are The Hotbed Collective.
We are. And today we're actually talking to one of my all-time heroines, Sally Hughes. And I'm going to have to be quite careful, actually, that I don't fawn too much all the time. Sally's basically somebody who knows everything about beauty and skincare. So if you ever want to get the lowdown on anything to buy in that genre. And what I love about her is that she doesn't shy away from being critical. So she hasn't been, I don't think she's been bought over by all these big cosmetics brands. So she tends to say what she thinks. She's also a journalist who writes about relationships and sex for The Pool. And we're going to be talking about the whole idea of the maintenance shag, which was a phrase that she coined. We'll go into a bit more detail about that. It's fairly self-explanatory, but sort of the kind of shag that you have when you decide that it's been a bit too long and it's time to just crack on with it. So that's the kind of thing that Lisa doesn't do, because she's always having really good sex all the time, aren't you?
Yeah, mine are never run-of-the-mill maintenance shags. They're always full-on porn star, performance-based, pay-per-view-worthy extravaganzas with dancing girls. There's often dancing
props. You have a lot of props, don't you?
Props, lots of bondage gear, whatever I can get my hands on, all kinds of toys. I mean, buzzing is the word.
I was going to ask you, because I hear a lot of talk about sex droughts, and we're going to talk more about it. It's such an unpleasant phrase, and it's something we've written about as well in magazines. What would you say, what's the longest you've gone in a relationship without sex? Because when people say they're going through a sex drought and then they go, oh, we haven't had sex for like 3 days, and I'm like, honey, that's no sex drought, that's just you're a very lucky lady.
Yes, I remember, so big fan of Trisha over here, Trisha the show. Trisha Goddard once said in an interview, well, you know it's all going wrong when you're not having sex 3 times a week. And I thought, quite a lot. And actually, what I think is important and has been important about our work with the Hotbed Collective is that we don't really focus on how often people do it. Because to me, that's the same as like, how long do you last in bed? It's not a barometer of good sex or a healthy relationship. I don't think it is about quantity. I think it's about quality more than quantity, but not always quality. I mean, sometimes you can have a kind of average shag, but it's still better than not having one. I don't really think about numbers. It's also not about like how many people you've slept with, because you could have been with the same person for a very long time and become extremely skillful, or you could have slept with 75 different people, men and women, and still be a terrible lover.
Because it's been a bit crap. What do you think about this whole idea? Because we've discussed it a lot before, I think, this kind of idea of scheduling it. So almost like in the same way that you do, like put out the recycling on a Sunday night.
Can I point out, is in my house pay-per-view worthy. It's an extravaganza when I put the recycling out. There's dancing ladies, lots of props, lots of toys.
It's a prelude to intercourse.
Often, especially when food recycling is involved, because that's my favourite.
brilliant. But what do you think about the idea of actually saying, okay, Tuesday night is business night, or, you know, Saturday night is always business night? Or do you just think, actually, no, I mean, that sounds so depressing that you have to put it in the diary, because otherwise it just doesn't happen.
It's put so brilliantly by Flight of the Conchords, who we love, who've got a song called Business Time. If you haven't heard it, we're going to put the link to it in the show notes. And it's all about, it can't be Monday because you've got netball. It can't be Tuesday because I'm out with the lads. And it's Wednesday, you're not too tired. It's business time. And it's just so spot on. I think that let's look to the experts. If we look at Esther Perel and our very own Dr. Karen, these are just, I mean, that's just two experts who say that you do need to work at desire, that it's not necessarily spontaneous, and that there's nothing uncool or unsexy or unromantic about scheduling in or working on relationship. So whilst I used to take the piss out of something like date night, and we've talked about it a lot, that going to the Harvester, eating loads of food, burping and farting, and then wanting a shag at the end of...
Oh, sorry, I just fell off my chair. You said Harvester and I suddenly got... My hunger pangs came on really hard.
Well, didn't you have an orgasm?
What, in the Harvester?
Well, when I mentioned Harvester, it's like Pavlov's dog. I say Harvester, you say orgasm.
It is the most erotic environment, I must say.
So while I'm personally not a big fan of date night, I am a fan of making some space for intimacy, and just thinking, maybe even from the moment you wake up, today I'm going to have a shower and shave my legs, and I'm going to allow myself to think a little bit about sex during the day, and then I'm going to make a decision not to binge watch Trisha when I get home. And there's an irony in the moment where you are beginning to get extremely annoyed with each other for little things, and you start picking and nagging and irritating the hell out of each other, is sort of often the moment where you most need to have a shag. And so it's trying to find your way out of that. You have not taken out the recycling now for 3 weeks in a row, getting from that moment to the come and take me now sort of thing. So how do you sort of navigate that? And it is sometimes about just forgetting about the petty stuff around the house, maybe having a glass of wine or having a little massage or a nice bath.
What about a Jacob's cracker with a bit of cheddar and pickle on it?
Does it for me.
It's way to my heart.
Moving on to sexy time, because you do find, I find anyway, that after a little maintenance shag, as Sally would say, you are just that bit nicer to each other and things matter that bit less.
Well, so that's our interview coming up now. So the amazing Sally Hughes.
Who I love, because not only is she a brilliant writer, she's a brilliant thinker.
She's very clever.
She is, and a lot of her work is well thought through and uncliched and extremely thought-provoking.
I want to be her friend, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I'd like to thank Mooncup for sponsoring this episode. If you haven't heard of a Mooncup, have a look at mooncup.co.uk to check it out. It's the original reusable menstrual cup made from medical grade silicon. It is vegan and eco-friendly and money-saving and all the other good words. I have been using one since I was at university, and trust me, buying one was one of the only good decisions I made back then. As a busy person, I've always liked how I don't have to empty it as often as you'd need to change a tampon, and you don't need to remember to head to the shops every month or think about what you need for light or heavy days, as it's great for both. If you have any questions about how it works, or if you're curious to try one, head to mooncup.co.uk to find out more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Pretty excited today because we've got Sally Hughes here. And I've got to admit a little something. Okay. I don't want you to think that I'm like a stalker or anything. But I've read all your books.
Have you?
And literally, if I go into Boots or a beauty department, I'm usually trying to Google your name because I'm usually looking up some sort of product that you've recommended and showing that to the sales assistant. So essentially, and whenever anyone asks me, what do? I usually say, well, you need to read Sally's column.
Nice.
To find out more.
That's nice. Well, I take that as a compliment.
Take
you
it.
Great.
Take it as a compliment. And I guess, yeah. And I, what I've loved, actually, we won't be talking so much about beauty today because I think we're going to be talking more about your writing and your journalism around relationships and in specifically something that you've written for The Pool a while back about the maintenance shag, which I'm really interested in finding more out. But I just wanted to say, as an aside, what I love about your work is that you're always brutally honest. And I don't think there's enough of that, not in women's magazines, not in journalism generally. There's just quite a lot of pandering to the patriarchy. So that's what I love about your writing.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So that is the exciting thing. Let's move on a bit, because the hotbed, we talk a lot about things like sex droughts and the kind of horrible situation you can get into in a long-term relationship where essentially you just sort of, you haven't had sex for a long time.
Yeah.
And you kind of feel like you need to have sex. You've got this kind of horrible anxiety that everyone else is having more sex than you. In reality, they're probably not. I mean, your article that you wrote about the maintenance shag, tell me a bit about what is the maintenance shag?
Okay, so I write a weekly column for The Pool, and it can be about anything, current affairs, relationships, any sort of opinion column. And my friends had been saying to me for ages that I should write up my theory about the maintenance shag, because it's something I would always bring up in casual, friendly conversation about sex. Basically, it's the idea that we focus too much on having event sex and trying to make time for event sex, and actually the oil of the machinery of a relationship is just maintenance shagging. And what I mean by that is functional, mutually satisfying, possibly not that long in duration, sex that maintains a contact between two people who really do need to maintain a contact and an intimacy. And I think it's incredibly important, personally. I think it's incredibly important to make time for sex, especially if you've got children, because I just think that you should have a slightly conspiratorial connection with somebody that has nothing to do with your kids. Otherwise, you're just going to sort of, you know, put an axe through their head for not unloading the dishwasher. You know, it makes you so much more forgiving, I think, if the person that you live with is somebody with whom you enjoy that level of intimacy that has nothing to do with anything except the two of you. And people can get away with a lot more in a relationship if that is still intact.
I mean, we were talking about it earlier, actually. We were saying often it's the times when you are becoming irritable and picking on your partner for quite boring things like dishwasher loading or, you know, haven't picked up things on the stairs. That it's counterintuitive, but that is probably the time when you should have sex.
So completely this. And often you don't realise that that's why. And actually, if you take a moment, you go, it's actually because we haven't really had a shag in a while, or whatever a while looks like for you and your relationship. But there's a sort of clutch biting point, I think, where you just think, actually, things would be much better if we just got on and did it. And even if you don't instinctively feel like it, because perhaps you're already pissed off, I think when you're in that zone, you should try to do it anyway, because I do think with sex in a relationship like that, it's not like you ever regret it. You're always really happy afterwards that you did it, but it's just the starting off, isn't it? And I think you can put it off and put it off, and I think that's when the rot sets in. And so even if you think, okay, well, this is not perfect timing for me, this is not going to be a perfect shag, I do think it's worth having anyway, because it sort of resets the dials, and then maybe you can be a bit more creative and exciting from therein. But sometimes you need to scratch an itch and get back to square one.
And is it, I mean, because maintenance shag, there's something, I'm thinking about sort of car analogies and just keeping things ticking over.
Yeah.
Is it similar to sort of slightly crap sex? Or are you not saying that? You're just saying not having too high expectations. Is it just...
But crap sex, the thing about crap sex is there's only so crap it can get with someone that you love, I think, and someone with whom you share so much history. Mm. And so even if things go a bit wrong, it can be funny and romantic in itself. Mm. I think crap sex with a stranger is a very different game. Mm. And so I can't, if you love someone, I don't really think any sex is crap sex, because even if, I suppose, performatively it's not that great, it's still an intimate connecting thing. Mm. So I don't mean technically bad sex. I mean sex when you may not be raring for it. You know, you may not be thinking, right, I'm going to put on the nice underwear and I'm going to have a nice bath and we're going to get rid of the kids. And, you know, sometimes I'm afraid it is while they're preoccupied by CBeebies and you find a 15-minute window. You know, I think that's fine. I think that's better than not doing it at all.
Mm, it's so interesting because we've talked before about the pressures of date night, or, you know, the very sort of when you really put sex on the agenda.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, we're going to go to a hotel, maybe.
Yeah.
We're going to be kid free. You know, I am going to remove all of my body hair and I'm going to go to Agent Provocateur. And I've had friends who've not gone to that extent, but maybe have invested a lot in very expensive underwear and have then suffered rejection. And it's been a very mighty fall because they've invested so much care into that one event. So in a way, what I like about the idea of the kind of the maintenance shag is that it isn't pressurizing yourself. It's not that it doesn't have to be crap. It's just actually saying it kind of needs to happen and let's just keep an open mind and see what happens.
Exactly that. It's about maintaining a touch point between two people. And that date night thing that you're talking about, that hotel thing, okay, I'm all for a dirty weekend. Great, if that's what you want to do. And that's lovely. But also, you don't really then have the freedom to go, oh, should we just order a club sandwich and watch the telly in the hotel room? You don't have that freedom because it's all about this sex. Yes, exactly. Whereas when you live together or in your long-term relationship and you live apart and maybe, you know, you're a bit more settled in your ways, there's actually so much to be said for knowing that you and that person share a physical intimacy that you don't share with anyone else. It has nothing to do with the kids. It's funny, I've got two kids. My kids are really, really close. They're best friends. And they have a relationship that also has nothing to do with us, that has nothing to do with me. And I had that with my siblings. And so I think it's good for different dynamics to exist in a family that are private to those two people. I think that's healthy. And so the fact that my husband and I have a thing that has nothing to do with the kids when everything else is this shared endeavour is slightly sort of conspiratorial and intimate and a lovely thing and kind of keeps you sane. Mm. I do think as well, I know lots of people who've stopped having sex in the past, and a year can turn into 2 years, can turn into 3 years. And it's highly unlikely you're going to start having sex with somebody having not had it for years. You know, you're coming from a real standing start then.
Mm. It's a real taboo thing. But it's interesting, when we first started the hotbed, part of it was sparked by a conversation around a table where we were all talking about going through a period where we weren't having sex. But we were all under the impression that everyone was at it all the time.
Of course.
And then there was this lovely moment where people were like, oh, shit, you know, we haven't had sex for ages. Mm-hmm. Especially if you've just had a baby, that period can stretch on for quite a long time. And there's often a period of time where you actively hate your partner. I've never quite worked out why that is, but I think it's just the brutal sort of newborn tiredness, feeling frazzled stage. But it did feel it felt good to suddenly realise that everybody was going through something similar, even if they weren't the same sort of timelines. Have you found that with your friends as well? That actually,
yes, very much so. And can I make clear, I'm not suggesting that women who had a cesarean 2 weeks ago should be getting on it. No, I totally am not saying that. If people have just had a baby or are going through a bout of ill health, either mentally or physically, or someone is incapacitated in some way, of course that's different. But I'm saying day to day, all else being okay, it is highly, highly unlikely that two people will be okay not having sex.
Mm.
if there are two people who are fine not to have sex and just want companionship, then bingo, I suppose. But I think the chances are really low of that happening in one relationship. And so I don't feel long term you can decide on someone else's behalf that they're not going to have sex anymore. I sort of think that's gross misconduct in a way. It's a bit like coming home and saying, oh, by the way, I've decided we're not going to eat in restaurants anymore. Or by the way, I've decided we're never going on holiday again because I don't feel like it. It's just not something you can take from someone's life without consultation. And so I do think it's absolutely worth, when all else is well, nobody's ill, nobody's just pushed a baby out or whatever it is, I think it's really, really worth forcing those moments, making that time.
Because a lot of people listening will go, I love the sound of this maintenance shag, but Jesus, you know, I'm it's going to be me that's probably going to have to initiate
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Because often it's the myth is that guys do, but often it's the woman who might have to, you know, how do I go from slobbing out watching telly night to just this next thing? And do I just not overthink it? I just sort of throw myself in there and see what happens.
I am somebody, everyone's different, but I am somebody who finds it incredibly difficult to be up for sex if no touching whatsoever has occurred that day. I'm not going to be in it at that point. And so I do think that if you know you haven't had sex in a while and you really do need to have sex, whatever a while looks like for you, whether that's a week, a month or a year, I do think the first thing you have to do is initiate touching. And that can just be if somebody's doing the washing up, going up behind them and giving them a kiss and a hug, or, you know, a touch of someone's bum or a cuddle on the sofa. I do think touching, I can only speak for myself, but I do think touching has to occur. I'm not somebody who can go from 0 to 70 just by virtue of being in a bed. Do you know what I mean? And so I do think you have to initiate that stuff first. But there are certainly many times in my life in various relationships that I haven't really been up for it. And I've thought, oh, well, it just needs to happen. And I've just done it. And I've always ended up enjoying it because it's just not something you regret. It's a bit like going for a run, isn't it? Or going to the gym.
It's so funny.
You don't want to do it instinctively sometimes, but you come away and think, oh, well, I'm really glad I did that.
And you get into this catch-22, like you said, that if it goes long, long periods of time, that hurdle only becomes bigger, doesn't it? Does it, you know, that if it becomes 6 months, a year,
of
then
course.
It becomes this big looming issue.
It's like
issue.
Catching up with a friend that you haven't seen enough of. The longer it goes on, the more you think, oh, now it's an issue.
Yeah, and we're going to have to talk about it.
And we're going to have to talk about it, and we're going to have to download the information. So I think you do need to nip it in the bud, whatever that looks like for you, however long a period you consider a long period. But you don't want to let it go on too much. I think it's really important. It makes me able to live with somebody. If, you know, I'm 43. If I live with you, I need to have either given birth to you or I need to be having sex with you. If neither of those things is in place, I absolutely don't want you living in my house.
No, it
because
makes
I've got enough
sense.
Friends.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need another friend.
You don't need to live with a friend.
Yeah.
It's that kind of Morecambe and Wise sketch, isn't it? The two of you in your gym jam sitting up in bed. It's cozy and comfortable, but it's not sexy.
I love it, but also that stuff becomes even cozier and even more comfortable when there isn't this unspoken thing that you're meant to be dealing with. And so very often, I don't think he'll mind me saying, so sometimes we'll have a shag sort of early doors and we'll really shamelessly say to each other, oh, brilliant, so we can just watch telly when we go to bed tonight. Like there's no expectation at all. It's like a license to go and watch Netflix with a cup of tea and do a crossword in bed, which we very often do. And I think taking that weight of expectation off things, knowing that need is being fulfilled, actually makes the downtime, the lazy times, even nicer. It's a bit like having a quiet night in is so much more rewarding if you've been out first.
I know, it is. It's taking that expectation away, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you think? One of the other things you mentioned, which I thought was interesting because we've talked about as well, is kind of the kind of depictions of sex that we see on TV and in films. And I don't think we often see a maintenance shag on telly.
No. So,
I mean, I quite often talk about The Affair because that was something that I watched a lot of. And I was always really, I know a lot of that show was about sex and attractive looking sex and stuff, but it was always shown as being very passionate. And even actually with the long-term relationship that's in that programme, that they're together for 20 years or something, they were suddenly overcome with spontaneous desire and they would have sex on the kitchen sink, or, you know, you're somewhere where you just sort of thought, does that really happen in real life? And I watched it with my partner, and we were going through a phase where things weren't really happening. And I thought, God, you know, it would be so liberating in a way to see something that's a little bit more realistic. Not that it has to be depressing.
Sort of quotidian.
Yeah, it's just a bit more every day, because I think when you are in a long-term relationship, there's a real, even for men, there must be an anxiety of, hang on a minute, I'm not Dominic West. I'm not going to push you up against a tree and say something, you know, abstract. I may just have a quick roll around in the duvet and that's it, and then go back to watching my iPad.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, I suppose it's changing. Did you see Wanderlust at all?
Yes, I did.
And did you feel that
was
moving?
I presented the launch of it, actually.
Did you?
So that's interesting. I saw it in advance. I thought some of the sex in that was closer to what you're talking about, closer to that level of realism. Initially, I thought, oh, God, all the married sex is going to be quite mundane and disappointing. And that's not my case, because actually, despite what I'm saying, I have a really good sex life. I really enjoy my sex life. It's not like I think it's mundane. Mm. Initially, I thought it would portray sex between married people in a negative way. But actually, as it went along, I thought it was quite good. Mm. It's not that I'm advocating bad sex. I'm advocating some sex and whatever that looks like for you on that particular day. And of course, it's such a cliche, and this must come up on this podcast all the time, but absolutely the thing that makes all of it work is talking about it. And so I think it's very hard to navigate a sex drought if you're both ignoring the issue. And I think it's much healthier for someone to say, actually, we really need to have sex because you're doing my head in, or I'm obviously doing your head in. We actually really need to have sex. I think that's much healthier and in a way more romantic. It sounds cold and technical, but I think it's showing that you want to take care of the relationship. I think ignoring it and thinking, oh, God, we haven't had sex for ages, nobody's saying anything, is really unhealthy.
Just as a final question, because one of the things that we're really passionate about is this whole idea of of orgasm inequality. So the fact that women have far fewer orgasms than straight men, gay women, so women in straight relationships. Mm-hmm. And I guess what we're sort of looking at loads of reasons why that might be happening. Loads of available porn, you know, patriarchy, all sorts of other things, sex education. What do you think, how can we actually work towards women having more equality in that area? Because you've already said that sex is pleasurable, it's free, it's fun. You know, it's that's why it's never, ever going to go out of fashion. We're never going to be totally plugged into our devices. But how can we sort of make it more likely that more women are having that pleasure more of the time? What do you think is one of the central issues that we have to look at?
I do think a really key part of that is that women are raised and live very often in a way that is around making men happy and around making men think that they're nice women. And I think that there are many downsides to that. But in sex, one of the big things is making a man think you're enjoying something that actually isn't really doing that much for you. And letting men know that you have found something enormously pleasurable, perhaps even orgasmic when you haven't, and not wanting to hurt his feelings by saying, actually, that's not quite right for me. And so there's an awful lot of people pleasing that goes on in sex from straight women to straight men. And I think, you know, we have to be honest, there are ways of saying things. I always think that if you're going to talk about sex, what you would prefer, what you would like less of, you should do it in the sex. I would not do it afterwards. I would not do it out of context. So I would do it in the bedroom. I think if you take it out of context, it becomes more of a thing, as though you've been mulling it over. Mm. Whereas when you're already in bed, there's a sort of trust and there's an intimacy where anything goes, where you can say things. So I would try and say it there and then, personally. And don't fake it. It's really, really hard because, of course, you know, I faked it. I think most of us have faked it when we were younger in particular. Mm. And of course, you can get yourself into a cycle then where the moment you don't fake it, a man thinks he's screwed it up, you know. Mm. But I really do think men want you to enjoy it. I really do. I've never been in a relationship with a man who didn't really, really, really want me to enjoy it. But it's a question of, do I owe him that validation, or do I owe myself the sex that
you
will
deserve.
Make that validation correct?
Well, listen, Sally, you've been brilliant, and it's been so nice to hear this perspective. And I think actually, you've hit the nail on the head with this whole maintenance shag thing. And I think lots of our listeners will be thinking, God, yeah, I'm just going to go for it. And I'm going to forget about maybe trying to schedule in a big high voltage weekend.
I get emails all the time from people saying we had a shag last night because we read your piece.
Oh, really? Yeah. We see, that's
including
good.
Including my friends or my friends' husbands. It's quite weird.
It is so nice, isn't it, hearing a woman talk in quite a matter-of-fact, unapologetic way about enjoying a sex life and how she actively makes it work for her and for her family, you know, for her partner and for their overall happiness. It's so refreshing.
But you know, like at the beginning, and I was being a bit fawny, but I think at the beginning when I was talking about the way that she writes, and that she applies that to everything. So when it comes to beauty and skincare, it's the same sort of mindset. It's kind of like, you know, separating the wheat from the chaff. And I find it's really nice talking to someone like that, and I want to emulate them. And I also love the fact that we look into so many different things, so many different causes of kind of sex droughts or sex being a bit rubbish. But actually sometimes just having that impetus to take action, you know, because as women, we can get very caught up in these kind of thought cycles and analysis. And, you know, I love the straightforwardness of it, of actually like, you know, just make it happen.
The other thing that we talked about just before is sort of reasons why we've had sex droughts or just, you know, longer than average in between shags. And Sally mentioned, you know, physical illness, mental illness. But I also think so, you know, bereavement. So if you've lost someone, it can be quite difficult to get your sex life going again after that, because sex feels so, or can feel so self-indulgent. And so in it, it's brilliant because it is self-indulgent, you know, it's this moment that you give to yourself, whether it be, you know, giving yourself an orgasm or with a partner, you know, having a mutual thing. And if you've lost someone and you're sad, it can feel a little bit like, well, how could I possibly do it again after something so awful has happened to me? And so it's quite difficult. But, you know, in my experience, that first shag after something terrible has happened. So I've had it after a bereavement and also after redundancy. So, you know, two quite horrible things. That first shag doesn't have to be anything special, and it sort of shouldn't be really. It's a kind of, let's get this out the way so that we have done it and we can sort of move on physically from there. It's a bit of a watershed.
There's lots of other things in life that we maybe don't fancy doing. We're like, God, cleaning the bloody oven. Or do you know what I did? Cleaning the bathroom. This sounds really sad, but because I'm in like mental pregnancy cleaning mode, cleaning the bathroom for me was one of those things I put off for days and days, and then I did it and I was like, fucking hell, I enjoyed that. I mean, I don't usually enjoy it, but it was a task done.
Yeah, I enjoy cleaning out the knicker drawer or having clear outs of the kids' toys.
God. Yeah.
You don't want to do it, and then afterwards you're kind of, it's almost like that post-sex kind of cigarette moment where you're just like, oh, I'm so glad I did that.
So can we do like a slogan? So it is a bit like when Nike say, just do it. That's kind of a bit of the theme. Just do it.
Now, I think for the homework of this episode, I don't know if you've already planned something, Anarchy, but jumping in, I think that we should take Sally Hughes's tip about this 10-minute window. And we don't advise that you actually set an alarm on your phone, although you can do that. But I do really like the idea of this sort of grace period after you've had sex, where you don't suddenly switch back into parent mode or nag mode or Instagram scrolling mode, sort of vegetable mode. It's sort of just give yourself some time after that shag to talk about something funny or talk about the sex itself, because as we've talked about before, that is a brilliant window of opportunity to say what you enjoyed and what you didn't and what you'd like to try next time, or just to go to sleep.
Exactly. I think that's a good bit of advice.
Right, so everyone off for your maintenance shags. Ready, steady, go.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.